by Eustace Mullins 1992 on June 4, 1879. The New York Times noted, Baron Lionel Enda Rothschild, head of the world-famous banking house of Messrs. Rothschild & Co., died at the age of 71. He was son of the late Baron N.M. Rothschild, who founded the house in London in 1808 and died in 1836. His father came to the conclusion that in order to perpetuate the fame and power of the Rothschilds, which had already become worldwide, it was necessary that the family be kept together and devoted to the common cause. In order to do this, he proposed that they should intermarry and form no marital unions outside the family. A council of the heads of the houses was called at Frankfurt in 1826, and the views of Baron Nathan were approved p. 50 to examine the American situation in perspective. There are only 500 men, primarily in the major foundations, who are actively engaged in transmitting international bank or socialist orders to our government. Beneath them are 10,000 politicians, businessmen, media personalities, and academicians who, with the aid of religious operatives, implement the orders from London. To protect these traitors, the U.S. government has imported 25 million aliens into the United States, which includes 5,000 intensively trained terrorists and 100,000 hardened criminals. This force is intended to neutralize the opposition of the American people to communism. The government encourages crime, because it is the nationwide criminal force, not the police force, which keeps the population subdued. Americans must devote all their energies to defending themselves against the professional criminals protecting their homes and families, leaving them no opportunity to organize against the criminal syndicalists of the world order. This clever plan of subsidizing the criminal element was the sole achievement of the Law Enforcement Administration, a foundation-organized plan which originated at the University of Chicago. The federal government uses its armed police, the IRS, the FBI, the BATF, and the CIA solely to terrorize its American subjects into compliance with the program of the world order. Most American citizens have had to come to the painful realization that the FBI is not concerned with fighting communism, but only with battling American anti-communists. They now realize that the IRS functions as an armed group of terrorists, not to collect funds, of which the government has no need, but solely to extort money by force from American citizens. As part of the program of the world order, the intent is to render them impoverished and terrorized so that they will be rendered impotent and unable to organize to resist the world order. It is the program of 1984. The world order has no religious, political, or economic program except world slavery. Only by subduing all potential opposition can the parasite guarantee his position of lodging on the host. The world order sets up countless groups to promote any type of idea, and then sets up other groups to fanatically oppose them, but the masters have no dedication to anything except slavery. As R.E. McMaster wrote in The Reaper, the goal of international communism is not to destroy Western international debt capitalism. The goal of international communism is to enslave mankind at the behest of Western international debt capitalism. This is all you can ever know about the present world situation. And it is all you need to know. The Cockburns are too self-limited to understand that the appeasers collaborated with Hitler only to obtain the War I War, which was essential to their world program. Hitler was duped into going into the Rhineland, duped into going into Czechoslovakia, and duped into attacking Poland. The advertised belief is that he was amazed at the weakness of the opposition to these moves. In fact, he had been promised there would be no opposition, until he went into Poland and discovered he had been duped. The CIA has also spent billions to influence foreign elections, always for candidates inimical to the interests of the people of the United States, but dedicated to the program of the world order. However, its principal influence has been through its control of foundations and universities. The American people remain blissfully unaware that their constitutional government, with its separated powers of legislative, judicial, and executive departments, has been entirely superseded by the foundations, which generate basic policy for all three branches. Monetary policy is generated by the Brookings Institution and implemented through the Federal Reserve System independent of Congress, which has constitutional power to regulate the monetary system. Social policies, originated by the Ford and Rockefeller foundations, are enacted into law by Congress and upheld against all challenges by the Supreme Court. Foreign policy, a prerogative of the executive branch, is entirely based on foundation studies and recommendations. Staffs of all three departments are heavily infiltrated by foundation operatives. The CIA functions as the coordinating agency between the foundations and the departments of government. We well may ask, if the world order is in control, why do we need the foundations as gauleiters of the order's control? The answer is that the world order rules because it conceals its power. It denies that it exists. Although its power is obvious everywhere, in the government, in education, in the religious orders, in the wars and revolutions and famines which are so meticulously planned and executed, the world order, like the mafia, refuses to acknowledge its own existence. Its subsidiaries come and go, but the order remains constant. When too many people discover the Council on Foreign Relations, power is moved into the Bilderbergers or the Trilateral Commission. The order's control remains constant. The New York Times noted April 29, 1984 that 1,400 officials attending the annual meeting of the Council on Foundations, there were 21,697 foundations in the U.S., which in 1983 distributed United States $3.4 billion in grants. These grants are dispensed only to those who implement the program of the world order, and whose goal is world slavery. Once the citizen becomes aware of the true role of the foundations, he can understand the high interest rates, high taxes, the destruction of the family, the degradation of the churches into forums for revolution, the subversion of the universities into CIA cesspools of drug addiction, and the halls of government into sewers of international espionage and intrigue. The American citizen can now understand why every agent of the federal government is against him. The alphabet agencies, the FIB, IRS, CIA, and BATF must make war on the citizen in order to carry out the programs of the foundations. We have seen the close interlocking of the foundations with international banks and corporations, all stemming from the Peabody Fund of 1865. And the War Industries Board of Bernard Baruch in World War I. The foundations are in direct violation of their charters, which commit them to do charitable work, because they make no grants which are not part of a political goal. The charge has been made, and never denied, that the Heritage AEI network has at least two KGB moles on its staff. The employment of professional intelligence operatives as charitable workers, as was done in the Red Cross mission to Russia in 1917, exposes the sinister political, economic and social goals which the world order requires the foundations to achieve through their bequests. Not only is this tax fraud, because the foundations are granted tax exemption solely to do charitable work, but it is criminal syndicalism, conspiracy to commit offenses against the United States of America. Constitutional Law 213, Corpus Juris Secundum 16. For the first time, the close interlocking of the foundation syndicate has been revealed by the names of its principal incorporators, Daniel Coit Gilman, who incorporated the Peabody Fund and the John Slater Fund, and became an incorporator of the General Education Board, now the Rockefeller Foundation. Five men rule the world. This council of five consists of Baron Guy de Rothschild, Evelyn de Rothschild, George Pratt Schultz, Robert Roussa from Bush's family firm of Brown Brothers Harriman, and one vacancy at this writing. In the past several years, members of the council who have died include Averil Harriman, Lord Victor Rothschild, and Prince Thurnoon Taxis of Regensburg, Germany. None of them holds public office. but they choose who shall hold office in the nations. These Tve men comprise the apex of the pyramid of power, the world order. We may ask, why should there be a world order? Is it not sufficient to hold absolute power in a single nation, or in a group of nations? The answer is no, because of the nature of international travel, international trade, and international finance. International travel requires that a person may travel in peace from one nation to another, without being molested, except in cases of anarchy, revolution, or war. This requirement can usually be met. International trade requires that traders of one nation can go to another nation, transact their business, and return with their goods or their profits. This requirement, too, is usually met. If not, the offended nation can exercise military force, as Great Britain did in its Opium Wars. It is the third requirement, international finance, which called into being the world order. In earlier days, when international trade consisted of barter, payment in gold or silver or piracy, the seizure of goods by force, there was no need for a world arbiter to determine the value of instruments of trade. The development of paper money, stocks, bonds, acceptances, and other negotiable instruments necessitated a power able to exercise influence anywhere in the world to declare that a piece of paper represents $1 billion in real wealth, or even $1 in real wealth. An entry on a computer, flashed from London to New York, states that someone owes $5 billion to someone else. Without genuine power backing, no such sum could ever be collected, regardless of the factuality or morality of the debt. As anyone in the mafia can tell you, you don't collect unless you are willing to break legs. The world order is always prepared to break legs, and break them, they do, by the millions. The world order rules through a simple technique. Divide and conquer, divided impera. Every natural or unnatural division among people, every occasion for hatred or greed, is exploited and exacerbated to the limit. The polarization of racial and ethnic groups in the U.S. is accelerated by a flood of government decrees, originating in foundation studies, which are designed solely to set American against American. Only in this way can the world order maintain its iron grip on the daily lives of the people. The world order also rules by the principle of 1984, no groups of two or more people are allowed to gather unless the world order has a representative present. If you start a club of dandelion fanciers, the order will send someone who will be quietly helpful, avoid taking the front position, and who will offer to pay the rent of a meeting place or the printing of the minutes. In more radical groups, the order's representative will be the first to suggest dynamiting a building, assassinating an official, or other violent action. Order's determination to allow no group, however insignificant, to remain unmonitored. The world order adopted the Hegelian dialectic, the dialectic of materialism, which regards the world as power, and the world as reality. It denies all other powers and all other realities. It functions on the principle of thesis, antithesis, and a synthesis, which results when the thesis and antithesis are thrown against each other for a predetermined outcome. Thus, the world order organizes and finances Jewish groups. It then organizes and finances anti-Jewish groups. It organizes communist groups. It then organizes and finances anti-communist groups. It is not necessary for the order to throw these groups against each other. They seek each other out like heat-seeking missiles, and try to destroy each other. By controlling the size and resources of each group, the world order can always predetermine the outcome. In this technique, members of the world order are often identified with one side or the other. John Foster Dulles arranged financing for Hitler, but he was never a Nazi. David Rockefeller may be cheered and has members in controlling Moscow, but he is not a communist. However, the order always turns up on the winning side. A distinguishing trait of a member of the world order, although it may not be admitted, is that he does not believe in anything but the world order. Another distinguishing trait is his absolute contempt for anyone who actually believes in the tenets of communism, Zionism, Christianity, or any national, religious or fraternal group. Although the order positions in all of these groups, if you are a sincere Christian, Zionist, or Muslim, the world order regards you as a moron unworthy of respect. You can and will be used, but you will never be respected. It has taken centuries of patient effort for the world order to attain the power it exercises today. Its origins as an international force go back to the Phoenician slave traders, continues through the Panario families of the Byzantine Empire, then the Venetian and Genoese traders and bankers of the Middle Ages, who moved into Spain and Portugal, and later into England and Scotland. By the 14th century, the Genoese controlled the Scottish landlords. The imperial family of the Byzantine Empire, the Palaiologos, meaning the word, were attacked by the Gnostic faction, whose materialistic Aristotelian philosophy was the forerunner of Hegelian dialectic and Marxism. The Palaiologos devoutly believed in the Christian faith, as expressed by the Orthodox Rite. The materialistic Venetian and Genoese armies, with the aid of the Turkish infidels, looted and conquered Constantinople, the legendary City of God. The Byzantine survivors means deposit bank. The Lombards were bankers to the entire medieval world. Modern history begins with the transfer of their operations north to Hamburg, Amsterdam, and finally to London. The great American fortunes originated with the Guelph slave trade to the colonies. Many of the slave traders doubled in piracy. Trinity Church, whose leading vestryman later was J.P. Morgan, was originally known as the Church of the Pirates. Capt. William Kidd recreated their culture in Russia, with Moscow as the Third Rome. The plan to destroy the Orthodox Church and its Roman of New Rome leader was the hidden goal of the First World War. The victors came away with $1 billion of the Romanofo. After achieving the defeat of their hated enemy, the Orthodox Church during the Middle Ages, European power centers coalesced into two camps, the Ghibellines, those who supported the emperors Hohenstaufen family, an Italian adaptation of Weinblingen, the name of the Hohenstaufen estate, and the Guelphs, from Welf, the German prince who competed with Frederick for control of the Holy Roman Empire. The Pope then allied himself with the Guelphs against the Ghibellines, resulting in their victory. All of modern history stems directly from the struggle between these two powers. The Guelphs, also called the Neri, or Black Guelphs, and Black Nobility, were the Normans who conquered England in the 11th century, the Genoese who backed Robert Bruce in his conquest of Scotland, and who supported William of Orange in his seizure of the throne of England. William's victory resulted in the formation of the Bank of England and the East India Company, which have ruled the world since the 17th century. Every subsequent coup d'état, revolution and war has centered in the battle of the Guelphs to hold and enhance their power, which is now the world order. The power of the Guelphs grew through their control of banking and international trade. It was extended through the Italian centers to the north of Florence, in Lombardy, which became great financial centers. All Italian bankers, including the Genoese, the Venetians, and Milanese, were referred to as Lombards. Lombard, in German, means deposit bank. The Lombards were bankers to the entire medieval world. Modern history begins with the transfer of their operations north to Hamburg, Amsterdam, and finally to London. The conspirators knew that their parasitic way of life would not be long endured by any host. They had to set up a program to subdue and overcome all governments, all religious creeds, all group loyalties, and replace them with their own world order, which would allow any type of perversion, as long as the host peoples tolerated the presence of the parasite. The old morality had been based upon the duties and responsibilities of the citizen to raise a family, attend church, and support his nation. The new morality, the liberation theology, swept away all duties of the citizen. He now only had a single duty, to obey the world order. In return, he was relieved of duties and was free to gratify his needs, his sexual desires. Perverted gratifications with children and animals, abandonment of monogamous life. The new morality reduced the citizen to a mere animal, which was what the world order required in order to perpetuate its parasitic way of life. Society was now replaced by a mere facade of society. Only one crime would be severely punished: any resistance to the world order. Murder, rape, arson, armed robbery, incest, child molestation, alcoholism, drug addiction, homosexuality, all would be excused as minor aberrations, as long as the world order was allowed to function without hindrance. One former crime, treason, now vanished, because national loyalties no longer existed. No one was expected to be loyal to the world order, except its own members. The host peoples, the slaves, would never be asked for loyalty, only for obedience. In the 20th century, the foundations began to stupefy the European and American population with drugs. The final step in the enthronement of the world order. They had eradicated the last serious resistance to their program. The U.S. Congress has specifically chartered many parasitic functions in the philanthropic foundations. These groups now dominate educational and governmental institutions, laying down financial and social goals which are designed solely to maintain the hegemony of parasitism through its world order. The American foundations are not even run by Americans. Their policies are formulated in London by the financiers and transmitted to this country through the British Army Bureau of Psychological Warfare Front Tavistock Institute. This is a typical disguised parasitic operation.